The previous Mishnah began to talk about a beehive which is situated outside. None of it is inside the house. And it's placed on its side, so the cylindrical wall of the beehive is on the floor. And the truth is, in this Mishnah, Chosek Vermin Aretz Tefach, it was raised at least a tefach from the ground. And since underneath the beehive is an empty space of at least a tefach high, that is considered an oihel, which means that any impurity which will enter that area will automatically be spread to the entire area underneath the beehive. And the first part of the Mishnah will continue to talk about a beehive of the previous Mishnah, which is considered to be a kli. Halachically, it's defined as a kli, which means that it's a useful item, and because of that, it does not have the power to block impurity from passing beyond it. Says the Mishnah, Tumatach teho oy al gabo, if there is a piece of a dead body which is a source of impurity, either underneath the beehive or above the beehive, hakol tomei, anything will be impure. That is to say, any item which is placed above or underneath the beehive, even if it's not directly in line with the piece of the dead body, will be tomei. The reason for this is because, of course, the impurity travels directly upwards and downwards, and since the barrel forms an oihel underneath it, and it's considered an oihel to spread the impurity to anything which is underneath the roof, but on the other hand, it's not an oihel to block the impurity. So once the impurity, it does fill up that whole area underneath the beehive, that all rises past the beehive, it's not blocked by the beehive, and any item which is above the beehive will become tomei, elotoicha, except for the items that are inside of the beehive itself, those would be protected by the walls of the beehive. The walls of a movable item have the ability to protect the items which are inside of it, even if it can't block impurity from traveling beyond the beehive. It is sufficient to protect that which is inside of it from becoming tomei. Besoicha, if the piece of the dead body is inside of the beehive, hakol tomei, then any item would be impure. The tumor spreads to anything which is inside of the beehive because of the top of the beehive, which is a roof. It's an oihel, and of course it rises and goes downwards since the beehive has not got the ability to block any impurity. Ba'an v'rama murim, when are these laws stated? Bizman shehu kli, in a case where the beehive has the status of a useful kli, in which case it doesn't have the ability to block impurity. However, if it lost the status of a useful kli, for example, haisap chusa, if it was broken, a hole developed in it, uf kuka bakash, and the hole was filled up with straw, if it wasn't filled up with straw, obviously it wouldn't have the power to block any impurity because there's a hole at least the size of a tefach in it. But if the hole is blocked up, then it would block the impurity because it no longer has the status of a kli. And that will lead us to the upcoming cases of the Mishnah. But there's something very important that needs to be taken note of over here. In all of the previous scenarios, when the Mishnah came to differentiate between a beehive that does have the ability to block impurity and a beehive that does not, the Mishnah mentioned two things. One is whether it's considered to be a useful kli or a broken one. If it is a useful kli, then it does not have the power to block the impurity. But the second thing that the Mishnah mentioned is that it must be that the beehive has holes in the wall, two holes opposite each other, through which the bees would generally come in and out of the beehive. Because if there are no holes at all in the beehive, then we say that the impurity leaves only through the main opening at the end of the cylinder. Something that is totally shut, in general, we say that the tumor does escape through the walls, but there's no opening at all. And the tumor needs to escape somehow, so we say that it escapes through all of the sides. But over here that there is one very clear opening from the beehive, the tumor would exit from the beehive only via the opening. But the rest of the beehive, the walls and the bottom, that would block the impurity from leaving the beehive via that route. And that's why the Mishnah required that there be other smaller holes, even if they are slightly closed with straw, as long as it's not blocked properly. The existence of those holes make it that it's no longer a case where the only main opening from the beehive is that opening at the end of the cylinder. There are other holes that can be used to remove the piece of the dead body. So it's only because of the existence of those holes that the impurity can ever leave the walls of this beehive. But over here, the Mishnah did not make any mention of it. The Mishnah seems to imply that even a beehive without any holes, and it only has the opening at the end of the cylinder, the impurity would still be able to leave via the walls. And we don't say that the only opening and the only way that the impurity can leave is via the main opening at the end of the cylinder, the end of the beehive. The reason for this is because over here we're talking about a beehive which is outside of a house. And the explanation for this difference is that if we have a beehive that half of it is outside of the house, half of it is inside of the house, so there are two factors that combine together to say that the impurity, the piece of the dead body, is escaping outside the main opening. One is the fact that that's the opening of the barrel, and the other factor is the fact that one always tries to get rid of the impurity. That's the entire concept of Sof Tomalotzes. It's based on the fact that people remove impurity from somewhere outside of the house. They take it away. Those two factors combine together to cause us to say that the impurity only leaves via the main opening of the beehive outside of the house. But over here that we're talking about a beehive in the open, the only factor which is, so to speak, pulling and drawing the impurity towards the main opening specifically for it to exit that way is the fact that that's the main opening. But we lack the second factor, that part of it is in a house and it's going to likely be removed from the house. And because we don't have both factors involved over here, the impurity is able to leave via the walls and the other parts of the beehive as well, and not only via the main opening at the end of the beehive. The Mishnah now talks of an additional case of a beehive that does not have the status of a kli. The first case, which the Mishnah just brought and has brought a number of times in this perek, is a beehive that has broken, a hole developed in it. But over here, the Mishnah adds an additional case, which actually seems very odd based on the way that we've understood the perek until now. We've understood that we've been talking about a beehive that is too large to become tomei itself. If the beehive itself could become tomei, then it's not relevant to talk about any protection whatsoever. A tomei item, in the vast, vast majority of cases, never has the ability to protect impurity from passing beyond it. It wouldn't even protect that which is inside of it. And that is why we have been explaining that the Mishnayos are talking about a beehive that is too large for it to be able to become tomei. The Mishnah now, however, brings an opinion that argues on all of that, and according to the Chachomim, if the beehive is able to hold a volume of 40 sa'or of liquid, and as such it is too large to become tomei, such an item is not even considered, halachically speaking, to be defined as a kli. And according to the Chachomim, it would have the ability to block impurity. The Chachomim over here are arguing on many of the laws that we've seen throughout the perek. Be as it may, in a case we have a beehive that is not defined as a kli, either because it's broken or according to the Chachomim because it is too large to become tomei, and there is a piece of a dead body the size of an olive underneath the beehive, anything in line with it, and from the bottom of the beehive going downwards, even underground, that would all become tomei. This is a case of tumarat tzutzah, where there is less than an open space of a tefach in the area where the piece of the dead body is, underneath the beehive. And just by the way, when we talk about it being underneath the beehive, in general, that doesn't mean that it's touching it. Just because the beehive is a cylinder, so a part of the beehive towards its side is able to be on top of a piece of a dead body, which is directly underneath it. So anything underneath it would be impure, but nothing above the beehive or in the beehive would be tomei, because the beehive has the ability to block the impurity. Al gaba, if there is a piece of a dead body above the beehive, kenegdat harakia tomei, anything in line with it and going upwards to the sky, all the way downwards until the top of the beehive, any item over there would be impure, but nothing lower than that would be tomei, because it is blocked by the beehive, since it doesn't have the status of a kli, so it does have the ability to block the impurity. But soicha, if there is a piece of a dead body inside the beehive itself, ein tomei ala toicha, only the items which are inside of the beehive would become tomei. The top of the beehive spreads that tumor to all of the items inside of the beehive, but once again, the tumor would be protected from exiting the beehive and making items which are above it or below it tomei, since it is not a kli, so it has the ability to block impurity. What happens if this exact same beehive was raised above the ground by at least a tefach? Tumotach teho. If there is a piece of a dead body underneath it, tachteo tomei, any item underneath the beehive would become tomei. It is spread via the beehive, which is forming an oihel above it. Besoicha. If the piece of the dead body is inside of the beehive, then only toicha tomei, the inside of it, would be impure, but the beehive protects the impurity from leaving it, al gabar. And if the piece of the dead body is above the beehive, kenegdat harakia tomei, only is something which is directly in line with the dead body, going upwards all the way down to the top of the beehive, would be tomei, but anything else would be protected by the beehive, because the tumor cannot travel beyond it, since the beehive is not a kli. Missionary Gimel, when the Mishnayos talked about a beehive which was situated inside of a house, after talking about all of the scenarios of the beehive being on its side, with its opening on the outside of the house or on the inside of the house, it then talked about a case where the beehive was standing upright. However, the case that the Mishnah chose to talk about was a case where it was upright and it reached all the way until the ceiling. So it's considered to be part of the ceiling, part of the oihel, and therefore it would have the ability to block impurity from passing beyond it. Over here, we're talking about a beehive outside of a house, and Hosa Yoshevis al Shuleha, the beehive was standing upright on its bottom with the open end of the cylinder facing upwards, and this time it's irrelevant to talk about it reaching the ceiling. There is no ceiling. The hukeli, and it is a halachic kli, it's still a useful beehive. If there is a piece of a dead body either underneath it, and in this case, if it's underneath it, it would certainly be touching the actual beehive, because it's the part of, it's the end of the cylinder which is resting on the ground, where that's totally flat. Or if the piece of the dead body is inside of the beehive, or on top of it, in all of these cases, tuma bikas v'oila bikas v'yeredes, the impurity goes directly upwards and directly downwards. Any item which is in a direct line with the piece of the dead body would become tome, and in this case, it refers even to those items that are inside the beehive. Until now, we've seen that even a beehive that is considered to be a kli has got the ability to protect that which is inside of the beehive itself. The reason for this is because tumor can only enter into a movable item via a pesach, as long as the movable item is not impure itself. And whenever the beehive is placed on its side, and you've got a piece of a dead body underneath or above it, and the beginning of the spread of the impurity is just directly above and directly below the dead body, and directly above and below is just the wall of the kli, not the opening of the kli. But in this case, to the extent that the impurity travels upwards or downwards, it reaches the opening of the kli. The opening of the kli itself is in a direct line with the piece of the dead body. And because of that, even an item which is inside of the beehive, as long as it's in a direct line with the piece of the dead body, it would become tomei. The tumor would not spread throughout the entire beehive because it's not an oihel, it hasn't got a roof on top of it. The entire top of the beehive in this case is open, but anything which is in a direct line with a piece of the dead body would become tomei. Continues the Mishnah. If the beehive was positioned in the same way, but it was raised from the ground by at least a tefach, so underneath it there is formed an oihel, or if it is covered, so the beehive itself becomes an oihel, or if it is turned upside down, so now there is a roof on top of the beehive, because the closed end is at the top, and then if there is a piece of a dead body either underneath the beehive, inside of it, or on top of it, in all of these cases are called tomei, any item which is either underneath, inside, or above the beehive would become tomei. Since the impurity is in a direct line with the opening of the beehive, it can even enter into the beehive, and the beehive in these cases has an oihel. So as soon as any tumor enters into a part of the beehive, any item in the beehive becomes tomei. And in the case where the open end of the beehive is facing upwards, however, there is a tefach of space underneath the beehive, in that case also, any item would inside of the beehive would be tomei. Even though there's no oihel on top of the beehive, since underneath the beehive there is an oihel, so the tumor spreads to all of the area right underneath the beehive, and the beehive itself is a kli, so it doesn't block that impurity from traveling further upwards. And included in upwards is the very opening of the kaveres, so that tumah is allowed back downwards into the beehive itself, and any item inside of the beehive would become tomei. So we'll just take an example. If there's a piece of a dead body on top of the beehive, in a case where the beehive has its open end facing upwards, so there's no oihel on top of it, even in that case, the impurity will spread to any item which is either underneath, above, or inside the beehive. Even if it's not directly in line with the dead body. And the route that the tumor takes is that first it travels in a direct line upwards and downwards, and since part of what is in a direct line with the piece of the dead body is the oihel underneath the beehive, so it spreads widthways to anything which is underneath the beehive, and then since the beehive is a kli and it doesn't block impurity from passing beyond it, so the impurity travels past the beehive and upwards, to beyond the beehive. It doesn't go directly into the beehive because the bottom of the beehive does have the ability to block impurity. So it travels directly to the top of the beehive, but that's where the opening is. So as soon as the opening becomes impure, together with everything above it, that would also cause the inside of the beehive to become tomei. So any item inside of it, or underneath or above it, would be tomei. Mishnah Yudalud, Bamad Rama Murim, one of these laws stated, was Lanshi Kli, specifically in a case where the beehive has the status of a useful Kli still. However, Haisab Chusov Kukabakash, if it was broken and the holes had been filled up with straw, since it's no longer a Kli, it has the ability to block impurity. Or according to the Chachomim, even a beehive that is too large to become Tomei, it's able to hold a volume of 40 Sa'ar. According to the Chachomim, even that has the ability to block impurity because it's not considered to be a Kli, according to the Chachomim. Tumotach Teho B'Seicho Al Gabo, if there is a piece of a dead body underneath the beehive, inside of it, or above it, Tumo Baikas V'Eilo Baikas V'Yeredes, the Tumo makes any item which is directly above or directly below it impure, including the items which are inside of the beehive itself, as long as they are directly above or below the piece of the dead body. And even though the beehive has not got the status of a Kli, so usually it has the ability to block impurity from traveling beyond it. And if so, why does the Tumo go from underneath the beehive upwards? Surely the bottom of the beehive should block it from going beyond there. The answer is, when we say that something which is not a Kli blocks impurity, that's only when it's considered to be an Oihel. Over here, the beehive is directly on the floor. There's not a tefach of space underneath it, so the bottom of the beehive is not an Oihel, and therefore certainly it would allow the impurity to travel beyond it, at least according to the first opinion of the Mishnah. And this is according to what we have learned until now throughout the other Mishnahs. But over here, Rabbi Elozer of Rabbi Shimon Oimrim, the Mishnah brings a new opinion. Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon say, Ein Tumo Oilala. Firstly, they say that Tumor does not enter into the beehive itself. If, for example, there is a piece of a dead body underneath the beehive, since the beehive isn't an oihel, it does not have the ability to block the impurity from traveling upwards. So as we explained, the Tumor would go to the area above the beehive. But on that last point, that according to the first opinion in the Mishnah, once the impurity is above the beehive, and at the top of the beehive is an opening, so it now enters into the beehive itself. On this point, Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon argue, and they understand that since at the end of the day, we view the beehive as its own enclosure, it's true that it opens up into the area above it, but it does not become tomei from it. At the end of the day, it's a separate area. Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon are introducing a new idea that even without getting onto the protection and the concept of an oihel, we're still able to view the kli as a separate area. It doesn't combine to become like the same area as the airspace above the item. It's not like, for example, in a case where there's a beehive with a tefach of space underneath it, and that tefach of space opens up into the airspace of a house. In that case, the area underneath the beehive is not a utensil itself, it's open area. So it combines with the airspace of the house. But over here, we're discussing the inside of a beehive, the inside of an object. So it's true that the top of the object is open, but that does not mean that it's defined as exactly the same area and a part of the airspace of the air around it. And because of that, according to Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon, even though the impurity does travel from underneath the beehive to the area above it, it does not enter into the beehive via the opening at the top. And all the more so, it doesn't enter into the beehive from the bottom, because as we have seen throughout the Perek, the immovable item's walls protect that which is inside of the item, even without getting on to being an oihel, because the only way for Tumah to enter into a movable item is via its opening. So this is the first point on which Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon argue against the first opinion of the Mishnah, and the second point of argument is Aflo Yeredes Mimena. They understand that the impurity also does not descend from inside or above the beehive downwards. If there is a piece of a dead body either inside or above the beehive, according to Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon, anything underneath the beehive would not become tomei. And this point, once again, is pretty difficult to understand, because the bottom of the kaveris is not an oihel, there's not a tefach of space underneath it. However, according to Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon, since it does not have the status of a kli, after all, it's broken, that is enough to give it the power of protection from the tumor going from the inside of the beehive outwards. However, this does seem to contradict their first half of their statement, Because even Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon agree that when there is a piece of impurity underneath the beehive, it does travel to the area above the beehive. We just said that it doesn't go into the beehive again once it's gone beyond the beehive. But they also hold that the bottom of the beehive does not have the ability to prevent the impurity from going from underneath it to above the beehive. So how can it be that the opposite is not also true? That when there is a piece of impurity above or inside of the beehive, according to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, all of a sudden the bottom of the beehive does prevent it from going to the area underneath it. This is indeed a point which requires further clarification. I did not manage to find a clear explanation. One possible suggestion is that when the piece of the dead body is underneath the beehive, and there's less than a tefach of space over there, this has the status of tumurat tzutza, so to speak, squashed impurity. And the law in the case of tumurat tzutza is that it goes upwards and downwards. But the truth is, the idea of impurity going upwards and downwards is true even without getting onto the concept of tumurat tzutza. If there's a piece of a dead body in the middle of the air somewhere, anything directly above or directly below it becomes tomei. However, it could very well be that tumurat tzutza, when it is squashed, there is a certain need, as it were, for that impurity to escape, to find an exit. Just like we see that the impurity follows the opening always, and it's, so to speak, of course it doesn't work like this, but it's looking for a way to break through and leave. And this is unlike a piece of a dead body which is in the middle of the air. Over there, there's a law that anything which is above or below it, if it forms a roof on the dead body, or the dead body is a roof on top of it, then it would become impure. And that would be equivalent over here to the case where there is a piece of a dead body either inside of the beehive or on top of it. Anything above or below it would become tomei, and over there, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon understand that the bottom of this beehive has the ability to block that impurity from traveling beyond it. But in the case where the piece of the dead body is underneath the beehive, and it is ritzutza, it's squashed, over there, there's sort of a bigger need for the impurity to travel beyond it. Over there, one requires a bigger protection and more is needed in order to block that impurity from traveling further upwards. And to the extent that the bottom of a beehive does not form an oyhel, it is not a strong enough blockage to prevent the impurity from passing beyond it. This is a possible suggestion of how to explain the opinion of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. And with that, we have reached the end of the 14 Mishnayos talking about a kaveres, a beehive, in all of the different positions and places. For those who are interested, the Mishnayos Zachar Chanoich have a gigantic chart of all of the cases and the laws that apply in each case. Mishnah Tesvov, the law is that something which is in its natural state, for example, a cliff or bedrock which has been there since the beginning of creation, something like that which is in its natural state, is not able to become tomei. This Mishnah discusses a number of cases where a coffin was buried inside a cliff, inside the bedrock, and the walls, as well as the bottom of the grave, is the bedrock itself. The only part which is considered to have been made manually, it's not in its natural state, is the lid which they placed on top of the grave once the person was buried there. So the lid certainly can become tomei, and if somebody touches the lid, there's no question it will certainly become tomei. The issue of the Mishnah is how much of the walls and the floor of the grave, if somebody touched it, would make him impure. The truth is, to touch the floor of the grave is pretty much impossible, and the discussion is more focused on somebody who touches the walls, in a case where the area around the walls was carved out, and it's possible to touch the walls, what would the law be in such a case? Now, one more word of introduction. We have seen a concept of kever sosum that states that a coffin or anything else that is totally closed on all sides, and inside of it there is a hollow area of at least a tefach by a tefach that contains a dead body, the entire coffin becomes like the dead body itself. So if somebody touches the coffin, they will become tomei for 7 days, just like if they touched the dead body itself. A grave that is wider at the bottom and it gets narrower towards the top, and it's been carved out of the top of a bedrock, the walls slope upwards. And there's a dead body that has been buried inside of it. If somebody touches the side, the walls, towards the bottom, tohar, he would remain pure. We're talking about a case where the lid just about reaches the two ends at the top of the grave, the opening. So if somebody touches the wall towards the bottom of the grave, that means that he is not touching a part which is in line with the lid of the grave. And because the wall itself is considered to be natural, so it cannot become tomei, and the person who touches that wouldn't become tomei. However, milamalon, if he touches a part of the wall of the coffin which is towards the top, and is therefore directly underneath the lid of the coffin, in that case, the lid is an oihel, and he is touching something which is underneath the oihel, so he would become tomei. Next scenario, what happens if it's rechovim milamalon, it's wider at the top, v'tzara milamaton, and narrower towards the bottom? Hanu ge'abo mikol mokoim tomei. One who touches any place on the walls of the coffin would become tomei, because that is all considered to be directly underneath the lid of the coffin. And since the lid is forming an oihel, it's a roof on top of an area of the dead body, and he's touching something which is also underneath that roof, it's a wall that is supporting that roof, he would become tomei. The third case of the Mishnah, Hosa Shava, if the walls were equal, that is to say they were vertically straight, Hanagebom Kalmokim tomei. Once again, one who touches any part of that wall would become tomei, because it is like the wall of a house, just like the ceiling of a house is the oihel, and the walls are supporting that oihel, so if somebody touches the wall, he'll become tomei. The same applies over here, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. That is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, however, Rabbi Yeshua says, and we're going to understand this according to one explanation, that Rabbi Yeshua comes to talk about the area of the bedrock which is underneath the coffin. If, let's say, they carved out quite a lot of the area on the side of the coffin, even below where the floor of the coffin is, and somebody touches a part of the bedrock which is underneath the coffin, mitefach olamaton tohar, if it is further away than a tefach within the bottom of the coffin, then he would not become tomei, because that's considered to be part of the bedrock. It already does not associate with the coffin, and is no longer considered to be a wall of the coffin. Only if mitefach olamalon, he touches a part of the bedrock which is at least within a tefach of the bottom of the coffin, then tomei, he would become tomei, because that's considered to be a continuation of the wall of the coffin. Essentially a wall which is supporting the lid of the coffin, and therefore he would make him tomei, just like the oihel itself would make him tomei. Next case, asurikim in kamtura, if the coffin is made in a similar way to a kamtura, which is a type of chest in which they would keep clothes. This was also narrower at the top, however, the lid covered the entire thickness of the walls. They had thick walls, and the lid didn't just reach the beginning of the walls, but it went over a lot of the walls as well. In that case, even though the walls slant downwards, we view the entire wall as being the thing that supports the oihel, the roof, and it all is associated with that lid. And therefore, Anagabom Kolmokim, one who touches any part of that wall, tomei would become tomei. Final case of the Mishnah, Kamin Gluskoim. If it is made like a Gluskoim, which is a container whose lid is similar to a cork, in that it goes slightly into the inside of the container, in such a case, the walls are not really considered to be the base on which the oihel stands, so they are not considered to be secondary to the oihel, to the roof, the lid, and therefore Anagabom Kolmokim Tohar. One who touches any part of the walls will remain pure, chutzum koim pesichosa, unless he touches the part of the opening of the coffin, i.e. the lid itself. But unless he touches that oihel itself, he will not become tomei.